just too marvelous. Two marvelous words, like glorious, glamorous, and that old stambambarous. It's all so wonderful, I'll never find the words that say enough, tell enough. I mean, they just aren't swell enough. You're much too much, you're just too very, very, to ever be in a Webster's dictionary. And so I'm borrowing a love song from the birds to tell you that you're marvelous, too marvelous for words. You're just too marvelous for words, like Gloria.
And now, last on our program for tonight is Holden Radio Theater's presentation of Woman Speak, a play written by Gloria Goldsmith. But first, a message from our sponsor.
Got a messy job, or a job you need for recognition but just don't want to do? Call Rent-A-Maverick. Our semi-skilled staff is well-equipped to tackle any job and receive no credit for it. Our workers are only mildly insolent and can be appeased with the mention of a volleyball game as an after-work treat. Don't delay. Matt says, keep those green slips coming.
Women's role in history. Does it have relevance for today, especially for today's women? Tonight, by bringing back the voices of important women in our history, we explore this question. And now, Holden Radio Theater presents Women Speak.
I am a product of my time, brought up on television, in a world where jet planes are not a surprise because men have walked on the moon. In a world of computers and electronic wonders, my heroines come out of the movies. I am a product of my time, and the woman I'm told I should be isn't the woman I want to be or think I am. I don't think I'm unique, but if I'm to grow strong in this complex, incredibly fast-moving world we live in, I need roots.
Don't despair. Listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm Abigail Adams, wife of John, second president of the United States. I'm part of your past. I think it would help you if you knew something about your lost history.
How?
If nothing else, it would be a comfort to know that no matter what women were doing elsewhere in the world in 1776, when the men were writing the Constitution, I was hoping that women would be declared equal citizens with men. Listen, I wrote this in Braintree, March 31st, 1776. My dear John, I long to hear that you have declared an independency. And by the way, in the new code of laws, which I suppose it will be necessary for you to make, I desire that you would remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power in the hands of husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound by any law in which we have no representation. That your sex are naturally tyrannical is a truth so thoroughly established as to admit of no dispute. But such of you as wish to be happily happy willingly give up the harsh title of master for the more tender and endearing one of friend.
What did he say?
Mr. Adams did not take it seriously. He answered saying, I cannot but laugh. We have been told that our struggle was loosened the bonds of government, that children are disobedient, that Indians slight their guardians and Negroes their masters. But he was shocked that our tribe, as he called us, a tribe of women, would think so rebelliously. His reasons were that the women, like men without property, would be excluded from citizenship because he believed those without property would not have good judgment, being dependent on a man of property. I'm afraid John felt that we would be unduly influenced, my dear.
But Abigail Adams, I don't remember learning about you at school.
Precisely why I'm here. You see, as a girl, if I had a dream, it was to be something of a rover, tramping around the world. Well, that wasn't possible for women in my day, but it was possible to be a traveler of the mind, to think, to have opinions, and I had those, plenty of those.
But you failed to make a dent in the Constitution.
You're right, but it was a beginning.
1850, Massachusetts, Sojourner Truth speaking at a women's rights convention.
Well, children, where there is so much racket, there must be something out of kilter. I think 'twixt the Negroes of the South and the women of the North, all talking about rights, the white man will be in a pretty fix soon. But what's all this here talking about? That man out there says that women need to be helped into carriages and lifted over ditches and to have the best place everywhere. Nobody ever helps me into carriages or over mud puddles or gives me any best place. And ain't I a woman? Look at me. Look at my arm. I have plowed and planted and gathered into barns, and no man could head me. And ain't I a woman? I could work as much and eat as much as a man when I could get it and bear the lash as well. And ain't I a woman? I have borne 13 children and seen them most all sold off to slavery. And when I cried with my mother's grief, none but Jesus heard me. And ain't I a woman? Then that little man out there, he says women can't have as much rights as men, 'cause Christ wasn't a woman. Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Man had nothing to do with him.
Do you think it's possible for women to change things?
If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone, these women together ought to be able to get it right side up again.
Excuse me, but I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Harriet Beecher Stowe. I was so moved by what you were saying so eloquently that I simply couldn't resist saying something to you in light of my own experiences in regard to my book, Uncle Tom's Cabin.
I find it hard to believe you are the woman the newspapers of your day called the little lady who started the Civil War.
It was a surprise. We never expected it to create such the furor it did.
Is it true that 3,000 copies of Uncle Tom's Cabin were sold on the first day of publication?
Yes, it was exciting. I couldn't believe it.
I think I read somewhere you wrote articles for the National Era.
That is correct. It was an anti-slavery newspaper. I wrote pieces for them from time to time. But I never dreamed this one would turn into a novel.
How did it come about then?
Well, it started as a 3 or 4 part story, but somehow I couldn't stop. It ran to 40 installments. It was as if the story had a life of its own. It was difficult for me. I had 7 children, and you can imagine how busy my household was.
Wasn't it unusual for a woman and a mother to be writing on politics in 1851?
Yes. But my father brought us up to have minds as well as souls, and not to be afraid to speak out. He told us that an economy that gets rich off the sweat of black bodies should collapse.
That's a revolutionary statement, Mrs. Stowe.
It is a common sense statement.
People have said your picture of the South is sensational and untrue.
I was accused of inventing the incidents of my story out of malice. But I have heard accounts of runaway slaves, of torture and abuse, of families separated, and said just like Sojourn's children were taken from her. I believe any evil that lasts long enough becomes taken for granted, that one human being having the right to buy or sell another being is evil. In this country, there are many who waver between slavery and abolition. I wanted to make Uncle Tom and Eliza live for them. I wanted my readers to care about people. And if they cared about people, they would never accept the premise of slavery again.
If you done that, you done a lot. You really done something.
Hello there. I would like to speak with you women. I was a young woman in Maryland in 1850, and I never met you, but it is time. I am Anna Carroll. I'm not in the history books either. In fact, you could say I was the best-kept secret of the Civil War.
Carroll, Carroll. There was a Carroll who signed the Declaration of Independence. Are you related?
I am. And I am also a daughter of a governor of Maryland.
When? When was your time?
I spanned a lot of history. My life in the 1860s will interest you most. I was a different sort of woman from my sisters and their friends. Part of me enjoyed the parties, the social life of Chesapeake Bay and Baltimore and capital society. I dined with all the eligible bachelors, but...
That must have been lovely.
But I was trained by my father to use my mind, and I wasn't sure where I belonged.
I know what you mean.
So I postponed marriage and set up my own business in Baltimore, research and writing papers for industry. I became an expert on extracting information from various sources and boiling it down to understandable English.
That is a talent.
What was your involvement in the Civil War?
The Civil War, that interests me. And then I must go.
Many in our family and among our friends favored the South. Maryland was a border state, but I followed my father. I believe the Union must be preserved.
The Union of the United States.
So eventually my reports, especially one dealing with the legal use of presidential power if Maryland seceded, came to President Lincoln's attention. He was impressed, and I might say immodestly, was a damn fine paper. It was as a result of that paper that I joined the cabinet, though not in the usual sense. Not an official member, you understand. A woman in the cabinet was unheard of, but I advised and researched. I was on a trip on other government matters when I realized that in order to be victorious, the Union Army must find a way of getting deep into the heart of the Confederacy.
Do you mean to say the generals didn't have such a plan? It's incredible.
Incredible indeed. They tried to use the Mississippi River. It flowed the wrong way. But not 100 miles east of the Mississippi was the Tennessee River, and it flowed the right way, straight to Chattanooga. None of the generals had bothered to consult the pilots on the riverboats about the flow of the river.
By God, leave it to a woman!
So that was the plan that won the war.
Yes, the Tennessee plan.
I look at you three, such different women living in different ways at the same time, not knowing each other, but contributing so much. And here you are. It's remarkable.
But you see, it is words and ideas, like my little book, that bring us together.
I'd like to listen a bit.
But why haven't we known something about your contribution toward the winning of the war? Something, anything. There are statues of generals from the Civil War in little parks everywhere. Why not you?
You see, at first it had to be a secret from the soldiers as well as the generals. The president and his advisors felt if the men knew a woman had devised a strategy, they would have refused to fight, or at the very least, have no confidence in the plan.
Fair, it is a disgrace. How do you do, madame? I am Susan B. Anthony. I am shocked at what you have to say. Why did you get no recognition?
You know, there were terrible problems during the Civil War, and when the war between the states was over, President Lincoln was about to give me public recognition, but He was assassinated.
Oh, there are no excuses.
Such a tragedy.
There was a women's movement working for acceptance and recognition of all women. But, Madame, here it is, 1867, and the movement has been in existence for 20 years. And where have you been? Why did you not join with us? We would have helped you.
I was doing my work.
Did you ever consider women's right to vote important?
I'm sure I did, and I had many friends who said I had a brilliant legal mind. If I was a man, I might have run for office myself. Who knows? But I had my own work to fill my life.
Oh, infuriating! It was your battle we have been fighting. And where were you?
Her head was somewhere else.
Somewhere else. Everyone's head is somewhere else when it comes to women's rights.
Why are you yelling?
Well, why not? Do you know what the editor of the New York Tribune called me? He said that I was a mannish spinster working out my frustrations because I introduced a motion on women's suffrage. Horace Greeley, the editor, informed me if I persevered, I could count on no further help from the Tribune. Mr. Greeley insists women do not want the right to vote. Oh, poppycock! In the 20 years since the first Women's Rights Convention, the movement has grown to overwhelming proportions. Still, we are told to wait. We have waited through war, bitten our tongues because we were told a country divided does not need to be further divided. Well, now the Civil War is over, and we are told this is the Negro's hour. The abolitionists swear this is God's will, and God must be a man. How can we not feel kinship for all disenfranchised Negroes, paupers, the ignorant, degraded, Chinese, idiots, criminals, as well as women? Why must we be made to choose between the rights of the black people and the female equality?
Please, I have something to say, if I may speak. There is a great stir about colored men getting their rights, but not a word about colored women theirs.
It has always been argued if a woman has ambition, it will bring her discontent.
Then let it bring her discontent.
That ain't it. Oh, no, that ain't it. Men have been having our rights for so long, like the slave holder. They own us. I know it's hard for one who has held the reins for so long to give up. So I am for keeping things going while we can. Because if we wait too long, it will take a great while to get them going again.
I can see it now. Fear of what women will become once we've gotten what we want.
Oh, a cow dung argument. I ask men, how would you like to have your wishes and your views ignored all your life?
It's hard to believe you were ever ignored, Miss Anthony.
I beg your pardon. But if the government derives its power from the consent of the governed, I am ignored.
It's very simple. Colored men have the right to vote. It's gotta be women, too.
Wait just a moment. Susan B.'s method was all wrong. She was so hostile. No wonder men didn't support her.
What's your method of approach?
Permit me. I'm Victoria Woodhull, and it's 1871. We are in Washington, D.C., at the National Woman Suffrage Convention. I've just had the most obnoxious floor fight with Susan B. Anthony.
What about?
She has no respect for me. Just because when my family was poor, I supported them by being clairvoyant.
A clairvoyant?
My sister, Tennessee, and I had a sort of a road show. But that's unimportant to everyone but Susan B. Anthony. We were also Wall Street's first women stockbrokers, and we had our own newspaper, Claflin's Weekly. I believe in free love.
What do you mean by that?
Free is only a word. Any free man is a noble human being, but a free woman is considered contemptible. Freedom for a man is emancipation from degrading conditions which prevent expansion of the soul. Have we not sacrificed enough women to hypocritical, sentimental dogma about purity? I'm tired of the assumption that women are ninnies, of a society that forces women to make a profession of seduction, of a society in which it is considered a reproach to be an old maid. That was part of my platform.
Were you running for office?
I wanted to be president.
Did you find supporters for those views at the convention?
I couldn't tell. We should have progressed somewhat in our thinking, but Susan B. Anthony organized the convention and was a power in her own right. Publicly and privately, she renounced free love as free nonsense or worse. I think that was her problem. She could not love freely or otherwise.
Looking back, do you really think the country was ready for that?
Why not? It was a healthy way to think of love. I have always given myself because I wanted to, not because I had to.
By that, were you talking about free choice in marriage?
Certainly not. After all, the 19th century is modern times. It was 1871. To me, this farce of marriage is public placating of sexual slavery. There were others who agreed with me, for I had the support of Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott.
Surely you know sex is a more dangerous issue than money or religion, and surely a free love platform would influence many against giving women the franchise.
Madame,
Susan B.
We fight in a common cause, for serious matters, not frivolous purposes. I remind you to be serious of purpose.
I do not consider sex ridiculous.
Miss Woodhull, you never belonged in the women's movement.
Miss Anthony, you two were rivals.
Fortunately, the following year in 1872, Victoria Woodhull was expelled from the movement, but stubborn Victoria Woodhull ran for president 5 times. You never knew that, did you?
No, I didn't.
The 19th Amendment giving women the right to vote was not passed for 30 years, and none of us who worked so hard for it lived to see that day.
I wonder, if women had the right to vote, would history be different?
You are listening to the Holden Radio Theater's performance of Woman Speak, brought to you tonight by the Idaho Lentil Growers Association.
Colon rectal cancer. It's a killer. Don't be embarrassed to death. The Idaho Lentil Growers Association remind you that lentils are a good source of fiber, which is a proven preventer of this killing disease. Write for a free booklet. 40 lentil recipes you'd never serve guests, but taste good anyway. Aside from their proven effects on reducing arousal, cold showers are great for your skin and muscle tone. The shock of cold water is also a wonderful primal scream stimulant. A friendly message from Holden Hydro. This is a test of the Holden Emergency Broadcast System. This is only a test.
Sensors check. Chalet 8, primary hose house upper, secondary hose house main. Sensors check. Chalet 8. Primary hose house upper, secondary hose house main.
This has been a test of the Holden Emergency Broadcast System. If this had been an actual emergency, you would have seen dozens of staff running around like ants and Kirk shouting unintelligible directions. This is only a test.
If your faucet has a drip, go see Jeff. When your shower will not drain, go see Jeff. If you see some water gushing and you don't know where it's rushing, do not worry, do not fret, go see Jeff. When your timer needs adjusting, go see Jeff. If the water is not hot, go see Jeff. When your toilet keeps on flushing and you're wondering where it's rushing, do not worry, he can fix it, go see Jeff.
Say, Herb, you're looking blue. Yeah, trouble at the workplace, Billy Joe Bob. Just found out about the Iran, Pizza Hut, Afghanistan, Pez Dispenser, Nicaraguan, Silly Putty, South African, Rambo action figure scandal. I just can't work for an institution that's trading piping hot deep dish pepperoni and olive pizzas with the Ayatollah for... Oh, Billy Joe Bob! No more free jukebox selections! No more free little after-dinner peppermint candies! You know how I love those little candies. No more! Oh, I'm out of work! Don't be silly, Herb. You're not out of work. You're in transition. In transition? Hey, I like that. Have you found yourself in a period of transition? Sick of money-grubbing, pig-headed, capitalistic yuppie types with sweaty armpits and racquetball elbow controlling your every move? Yes? Then join the fun and come to the pride and joy of the Great Cascade Mountains, Holden Village, where you'll enjoy taking long afternoon strolls through nature, digesting lentil loaf all by yourself, where you'll learn to knit and reach consensus at the same time, where you'll enjoy yourself in a casual game of friendly basketball. So once again, if you're in a period of transition, write Holden Village, Chelan, Washington, 98816. That's Holden Village, Chelan, Washington, 98816.
And now, Holden Radio Theater returns to Woman Speak.
First, I'll tell you, I've been listening to you last few ladies, and there are better ways for women to work than politicizing sex. They seem to think that Kingdom Come will follow the enfranchisement of women. I'm Mother Jones, organizer of the United Mine Workers.
Are you against the vote?
I never had a vote, and I raised hell over this country. You don't need a vote to raise hell. You need convictions. You need guts. The women of the Colorado had vote for two generations, and we were all in slavery, men and women alike, vassal to the Colorado Iron and Fuel Company. I made them angry. At one meeting, one mine operator proposed that the women be disenfranchised because some of them raised their voices in behalf of the miners. Another operator yelled, "If not for the women's vote, the miners would have beaten us long ago." I tell you what I told them. I never believed in women's rights or men's rights, but human rights. No matter what your fight, don't be ladylike. God Almighty made women, and society folk made ladies.
What are you doing with all those mops and pans?
The men were scared to organize, more scared to strike. The company would bring in scabs, and this scared them more. But I got the women together, the wives who surely suffered for the men as well as for themselves. And we'd gather an army of women with mops and brooms and tin pans and raise such a racket we'd scare the scabs away. This outfit is special to get attention, to raise a din. It gave the men the courage to resist the brutality of the owners. The story of the coal is always the same, a dark story. For the privilege of seeing a bit of their children, fathers must work in the depths of hell. For the men who work in the mines, it's a life of struggle.
How did you open their eyes to the real issues of your struggle?
I tell them, oh, I tell them. In spite of the oppressors, in spite of the false leaders, in spite of labor's own lack of understanding of its needs, I tell them the cause continues onward, and they must be a part of it. Boy, that's what we call making a racket, because it's going to change. We're part of making it a change. Slowly, very slowly, those who create the wealth of the world are permitted to share. The future is in labor's strong, rough hands. In the West, the Southwest, near the Mexican border, there were women soldiers who followed the Mexican leader, Pancho Villa. In the ruins of a Mexican settlement, wagons of refugees were heading by foot, donkey, horse, and wagon from the shambles of their village. There was a conflict of opinion on which faction set fire to the village, the revolutionaries, the anti-revolutionaries, or the Americans.
What is your name?
Adelita, you can call me, but my name does not matter.
Why are you in a soldier's uniform?
I am a soldaderas.
Isn't it odd to be a woman soldier in 1913, particularly a woman of New Mexico?
New Mexico, you call it, but to us it is the same Mexico.
But I always thought traditionally Spanish-speaking people place great importance on the role of woman as wife and mother.
Wife and mother, to be raped and tortured, terrorized. In times of war, women in villages like ours must be strong.
Are you connected with the army of Pancho Villa?
We believe in Pancho, but I do not wish to speak of him.
Who is responsible for the burning of your villages?
We do not know, but it could not be Pancho. He is for us.
Is that why you are a soldier?
I am a soldier because I do what has to be done. It has always been so. We protect the land, and if the men are gone or dead, we do their jobs as well. That is our way, and God's will.
Were there many of you who wore the uniform of soldiers?
Many. Es mi vida. It is my life.
Books have said the Mexicans settled the land here to recruit arms for Pancho's revolution.
School books and teachers, what do they know? We recruited arms to protect ourselves. You see our smoking ruins of houses we once lived in, and you know why we need arms. They blame Pancho for everything.
As followers of Pancho Villa, you place the United States government in the position of taking sides in a civil war in another country.
The Estados Unidos stole land from a handful of poor peasant farmers. Women and children were no threat. And that is why I am a soldadera. I can shoot with a rifle, but I love have children, cook, work on the land, cry, breathe, live as I can. But now I must go. They are waiting for me.
I'm with you.
Vaya con Dios, as we go with God.
Where are we now?
It's New York City, 1917. You must have heard of me. I'm Margaret Sanger.
You were involved with birth control.
Correct. My clinic in Brooklyn was the first in America. It was opened for only 9 days before it was raided and closed down. The law was severe in those days. I could have received a 45-year prison sentence.
Was it worth it?
There are 400 women in Brownsville tenements who will no longer be having baby after baby because of the clinic. Yes, I consider that worth it. I knew giving out our contraceptive information was illegal, but it's immoral and degrading to keep millions of women in sexual slavery.
It has always been a dilemma, Mrs. Sanger, even today.
I think they avoid the real issue. There are those who are terrified of what women may do when sexual pleasure is no longer a male prerogative. I'm afraid they truly believe we shall all turn into harlots, that we might prefer to become scientists or engineers, politicians or musicians seems beyond them.
Do you think women must do men's work, think as men think?
No. Her mission is not to enhance the masculine spirit, but to express the feminine. She must not accept. She must challenge. Her eyes should be less on what is than what should be. Woman must have her freedom of choosing whether or not she shall become a mother. She goes through the veil of death alone each time a babe is born. Birth control is a woman's problem. The quicker she accepts it as hers, the quicker will society respect motherhood. The quicker, too, will the world be made a fit place for her children to live.
I have moments of real terror when I think we may be losing this generation. We've got to bring these young people into the active life of the community and make them feel necessary.
Mrs. Roosevelt, what you said then in 1934 has such relevance today. Your words haunted us in the 60s.
I was concerned with the despair of the young. All their energy and idealism was being dissipated. It frightened me, the waste of youth. That's why I became involved in the National Youth Administration.
But it didn't work out. Weren't you disillusioned?
No, I was not. When Franklin was elected in 1932 on a platform in which he promised sweeping new reforms, I knew it could not happen fast enough for the ordinary people of the country, much less impatient youth. But I listened. The channels of communication were open. Remember that. Keep the channels open. I was called many things, but I didn't care. I was never a radical. I believed in people. But Emma Goldman was a radical. It's 1936, New York.
Are you Emma Goldman? I've heard of you. You were called a radical.
What? Who calls me radical? I went to prison as a radical because I said women need not always keep their mouths shut and their legs open. Radical, it's a word. Word, like a sneeze. Radical who? Radical when?
What made you so committed?
I came from a ghetto. out of necessity, my life has largely been in revolt. Perhaps the turning point was the Haymarket trial, when I saw four men hung, accused of conspiring to incite a riot. The fact is, they were honest working men who wanted their rights. I realized that only together could we work for justice. Once, I could talk all night. I could stand up at a meeting and speak, raising the roof with my voice, and not get hoarse.
What did you think of the suffragettes movement?
The right to vote and equal civil rights were good demands. It is necessary also for women to be equal partners in the labor force. Tremendous changes took place when she entered industry. In your time, how many women are wage workers? 80 million? 100 million? How many million women who joined the men to strike, to work for better conditions? Surely emancipation is complete. No. True freedom begins neither at the polls, nor the factories, or the courts. It begins in women's soul.
But no matter what you're saying, the label sticks with you. Red Emma, anarchist.
Anarchist. Words again. Always words. Misunderstood. I'm an anarchist of the spirit, not politically. I say what I have been saying all my life. Change will come. It is coming as our society is reorganized along the principles of economic justice. And someday, someday men and women will rise. They will reach the mountain peak. They will meet, big and strong and free, ready to receive and to bask in the golden rays of love. What fancy, what imagination, what poetic genius can foresee the potentialities of such a force in the life of men and women, in a world of true companionship and equality? I believe passionately in individual freedom.
So do I.
Let it not be said that our movement merely wishes to make more room for women. As individuals, we must work together toward a more humane society.
Our values, yes, our values.
I desire you would remember the ladies.
Any evil that lasts long enough becomes taken for granted.
I look for the day when the only criteria of human excellence shall be the character of the individual.
If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down, all of us women ought to be able to turn it back and get it right again.
I believe the union must be preserved. I'm tired of a society that forces women to make a profession of seduction.
I never believed in women's rights or men's rights, but human rights.
I do what has to be done, as it has always been so.
It is immoral and degrading to keep millions of women in sexual slavery.
We have got to bring young people into the active life of the community and make them feel necessary.
I believe passionately in individual freedom.
Each step toward change came out of so much pain and sacrifice and courage. All these women, and how many countless more we've never heard about, they are our roots. We are their continuation.
Women's role in history. Does it have relevance for today? Does it have relevance for tomorrow? Perhaps the words you heard tonight will help answer that question. This concludes the Holden Radio Theater's performance of Women Speak by Gloria Goldsmith, and another broadcast day for Holden Radio. Good night, and God bless.